Hey, everyone, and welcome back to The Perspective, a show where we tackle paranormal and supernatural claims, belief in aliens, conspiracy theories, and pretty much any other claim you want to call in and discuss. The number is at the bottom. Whoops. Okay, now it's at the bottom of the screen.
Now.
42430 if you want to talk to us. Jim, Bree, how you doing?
Oh, not too bad.
Doing all right. Looking forward to taking some, it's been a minute, so I'm looking forward to taking some calls, and I think rumor has it that we might have some UFO calls tonight, so I'm a little stoked about that.
Well, it actually looks like the first call we have is a UFO call.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's pretty nice.
How's Ethan doing tonight?
Ethan is, I'm okay. I've had better days, I'll just say that.
Well, you're still above ground and talking, so.
Yes, I am. And that's always a plus.
The bad days make the good days that much better, I guess. So.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you guys ready to jump in?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
all right. Let's go. So, going to bring the first caller up. It's going to be Joe from South Carolina. Saw a UFO come down and salvaged a crash UFO. This caller waited on hold for a long time last week. We didn't get to him, so assured him he would be the first caller tonight. So, Joe, you are on with Jim and Brainbug. How are you?
Hey there.
Hey, Joe. How y'all doing?
Doing all right.
Doing good.
You saw a UFO crash. Good. Is that what I'm understanding?
Well, yeah. I didn't realize what it was at first. It just looked like when the space shuttle came through and crashed through the atmosphere, just big long tail, molten metal just flying off of it. I thought it was this asteroid that, you know, killed the dinosaurs. You know, I was expecting, you know, it's the end of the world here. This thing was so big. And, you know, it took up the whole windshield, if you would, for perspective reasons, you know. Mm-hmm. The tail was just, I couldn't tell really how far away I was from it at first. I'd probably say, you know, 10, 15 miles, but it was huge. And, you know, I just kind of almost braced for impact. I just thought, this is the end of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so, it lasted about a good minute or so going through the air. And then, you know, no big thud, no tsunamis or anything like that. I was in Indiana or Ohio.
You were in Indiana or Ohio? Traveling?
I was traveling coming from North Carolina to Indiana to visit my girlfriend, and it was probably about 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. And I was right on the Indiana-Ohio border. In Ohio, headed north, and just mesmerizing. And then
how long ago
I traveled for another 10. I'm sorry.
How long ago was it?
It's the summer of 1996.
Oh, it's been a minute. Okay.
Yeah,
it's been a few minutes.
I asked because I recently read an article back in mid-October that a Russian satellite crashed or failed and streaked across the sky and was seen across the Midwest. It's just been a couple of weeks ago though, so I was wondering if it was something related, but it may be a related phenomenon though. I know satellites crash all the time, but there's some talk in your information here about salvaging the UFO. Is there something? Is this the same circumstance?
And if I could just real quick, what year was that?
That was 1996.
Okay.
Now, as I continued driving, all of a sudden this Hershey kiss shaped object. If you put your thumbs together and your index fingers together, it makes this Hershey-shaped kiss. There's a little dimple at the bottom. Mm-hmm. It was the exact shape. And it was red, orange, and yellow, just circling, all just swirling within that shape. Nothing outside the lines or anything. Everything stayed within that shape. And then, you know, I drove for like 10, 15 minutes. When it first appeared, it was like at my 11 o'clock position. And then as I drove for about 10, 15 minutes, I got to my 9 o'clock position, and I was 1,000 feet from it. I mean, there was a cornfield and then trees, you mm-hmm. know, like a forest. I pulled my car over, parked the car, and got out and watched this. And the thing had to have been at least 1,000 feet wide, 1,000 feet tall, and about 1,000 feet away from me. I like to keep everything in thousands. But, and I got out and I watched this for 30 minutes, easy. And you could just, it, like I said, just swirling, red, yellow. And it was just 50 feet above the ground. Just, I almost wanted to just run across the cornfield and you know, say, take me. You know?
Right.
I mean, at that point, I was like, okay, this is an extraterrestrial craft. And by the way, I should have prefaced this. I came from a strict Christian family. Mm-hmm. We believed that the entire universe was created just for us little earthlings. And, you know, Christianity, you know, Jesus is Lord and Savior of all, and nothing else exists mm-hmm. except us. And that's, I went to church 5 times a week. I did not believe in stuff like this until that night. And I know what I saw. It was right there. It was huge. And then I was like, well, I'm going to watch this thing till it zigzags out into outer space, because that's what they do, right? You know, I mean, that's, everybody knows that.
Right.
But it didn't. It just, all of a sudden, it looked like, well, not all of a sudden, but it took about a minute or two. It looked like someone took a black curtain and just from left to right, just slowly covered the craft. Just one side to the other, just slowly started disappearing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, whoa, okay. All right, so I get back in my car, and I'm driving with a renewed, you know, energy. And yeah, I get to my girlfriend's house, like, you know, 5 o'clock in the morning. And I just, you know, go to bed. Didn't think about it mm-hmm. for that day or whatever. And then we're sitting at the breakfast table the next morning. And my girlfriend's father's, you know, reading the paper, and we're sitting there, and it just all came back to me, just boom. And I was like, holy shit, I almost jumped out of my chair. I was like, you guys aren't going to believe what I saw, blah, blah, blah. And I just explained what I saw. Her father looked at me, you know, kind of folded the paper around, turned around and showed me the front page. It showed over 300 UFO sightings over this area last night, blah, blah, blah. So it made the news.
Do you know why?
I wasn't the only one that saw it. What's that?
Do you know why? There's a meteor shower, and that there was so many of those sightings. There's actually a meteor shower in 1996. And the reason why I clarified you on the... Yeah, there's a meteor shower.
There's a meteor shower every year. There's a meteor shower every year. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but no, this was not a meteor shower. I stood...
What made you feel it was extraterrestrial, though? I mean,
it was bigger than any blimp, first of all. The Hershey shaped kiss, and it looked like a perfect, like, I'm sorry to steal the title of the show, but it looked like a perfect fire in the sky.
All right. So how did you determine the size of the object? What did you use to get perspective on how big it really was?
Well, just by, well, like I said, you know, when I first saw it, it was like at 11 o'clock position, almost right in front of me, just off to my left. And then I drove for 10, 15 minutes before it got to my 9 o'clock position, and then
I was
1,000 feet away from it.
So my point is, I mean, what I'm trying to get at is Ohio and Indiana in that area is pretty flat. There's not a lot of ways to get good perspective, and without perspective, especially at night. So that's why I'm asking, what did you use to give you some sort of indication of how big this was? And how close it was. I mean, there had to have been something on the horizon that you knew the height of to give you some sort of estimate. Otherwise, the estimates.
I already told you that there was this cornfield that had been, it was already down as far, you know, it was already taken down. And then there was this forest, not necessarily a forest, but, you know, a big group of trees. And it was right above this tree, the tree line. And like I said, you know, watching it for 15, 20 minutes as I was driving, get closer and closer and closer till it came to my 9 o'clock position. And then it's right there. You know, you can see how, you know, how fast you're coming up on the thing. And it was just right above the tree. I mean, it wasn't 50 feet off the ground, and red, yellow, orange, just swirling. And it was huge. It was like 3 football stadiums all stacked on top of each other, 3 wide, 3 high. And
So you said he showed you the newspaper, and there were other sightings reported. Did you save the newspaper for that? I mean, I would have saved the newspaper for something like that. Did you?
I was 25 years old then. I'm 50 now. You know, I wish I would have. And, you know, I did actually, you know, several years later, filed a report with MUFON about it. And, you know, I had asked them, hey, you know, this was in the newspaper is at a Wabash, Indiana. And I just remember that the headline was there, 300 people, 300 people reported you as seeing a UFO,
right?
You know, and that's why I was trying. It was years later. It was after like, some kind of, Peter Jennings, TV show that I learned about. Oh, if you see a UFO, you can report it to MUFON. That's when I learned about that. So it was years later, and I was hoping that, you know, MUFON could help me find that article, you know, just by referring to it. And, you know, given this, you know, late summer of 96 and you know, this is what the headline said, and I was hoping they would be able to find that for me. And I wish I did have that article, but unfortunately, I don't.
Yeah, because
really she did too. So
yeah, because I'm looking it up online right now, and googling for 1996 UFO sightings. I'm not really finding anything in the U.S. For 96. Which is kind of interesting, because if there's as many people as you're telling us, that should come up, I think, pretty easily.
And by the way, 96, it could have been 95, could have been 97, but I'm thinking it was 96. It's just in my best recollection.
I did find a meteor strike in 99.
Wow, this is before 99.
I saw that when I was looking too, while you all were discussing how the size and perspective. I was looking at that article about 99.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, the first thing I saw, sure, that may have been a meteor, but the thing that was impressive is what I saw when I parked my car and got out and watched this fire in the sky, 1,000 feet away from me. That was huge. That was stationary for 30 minutes. That was not a meteor.
Right.
But the first
how long had you been driving at that point?
Oh, that. Well, let's see. It's like a 12-hour drive, so I've been driving for a good 9 hours.
Ooh. Yeah, that can wreak havoc on your cognition a little bit.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I keep coming back to the sizes. I mean, even with a forest, if you don't know how tall the trees are, it's hard to gauge, especially at night, hard to gauge sizes. There wasn't a radio tower or anything else that you could have gauged the size off of?
All the trees in that area, Indiana, Ohio, they're all about the exact same size within 10, 15 feet, which is about... They're usually about 40, maybe 50 feet the tallest. And this thing was right above the tree line so that you could actually see the tree line and this thing hovering.
Did you ever go back and look to see if there was any evidence? Like, I know that some UFO sightings, when people see them in the forest, they'll go there and the grass will be dead or there'll be a crop circle or something like that. Nothing?
I was 3 hours away from my destination, and my only concern was, seeing my girlfriend. I wasn't going to go 3 hours out of my way to go back at that point. And like I said, that was the first time I ever seen a UFO. Now, I've been two other times going back and forth from, I've driven from North Carolina to Indiana probably about 100 times, and that's not an exaggeration.
If you have more UFO stories, we definitely would love to hear them, but we might need to save them for a different call. Put that up in the barrel.
The only reason I bring up the other ones is because I did have a witness with me, which was my brother, who is a complete skeptic, and we are these red orbs just going up and down, lighting up the forest back and forth with, at speeds that you wouldn't believe. And we pulled over off the highway and we watched those things. And I saw those twice. And once my brother was with me. And so I only bring that up because I was like, I have a witness.
What's interesting about these fireball type stories, fireballs in the sky and round lights dancing through the sky. There was a show I was watching a number of years ago, and they showed exactly that. And they adjusted the cameras so that you could actually see what it was. Was it F-14 doing low-level maneuvering? And what you're actually seeing was the only part you could see of the aircraft was the exhaust. And when you look at it, it looks exactly like what you're describing is an aircraft or two aircraft doing low-level maneuvers. It could be a twin engine and a single or three single jet engines working. And that seems like the most likely explanation for that.
And they land in the forest and light up miles of forest, right?
Well, so again, I don't. No. Yeah, I. No. Without that actually seeing
it, I know what you're talking about.
Right. First of all,
we're getting off the topic of the first thing I saw. Which
now, you saw two UFOs, right?
Stationary for 30 minutes and a Hershey kiss-shaped object, 1,000 feet wide and 1,000 feet tall, not moving, with red, yellow, swirling light all in.
Right. And the shape is weird, right? Because the shape's not aerodynamic. It's just really an odd shape to say Hershey case. So it makes me wonder if you're seeing the entire object well at all, because the shape makes no sense. Oh. You saw two objects, one of which apparently crashed, but there was no fireball. There was no sonic boom. There was no indication of a crash on the first one.
The first thing I saw was this huge ball of fire streaking through the sky with a tail. I mean,
like a meteor, sort of. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's, I mean, like I said, I thought it was the asteroid that, you know, killed off the freaking dinosaurs, right. You know.
And then you get down the highway a bit further, and then you see this large, you didn't actually see the Hershey-Kissed object land, you just saw it in the field, or in the forest.
Right, it just appeared.
There were no other motorists?
My 11 o'clock position. Huh?
And there were no other motorists?
Was it?
There were no other motorists.
I was on a rural highway. It was a windy rural highway that just goes right up north of the border of Ohio and Indiana. There were no other cars, and you know, it was early in the morning, in the middle of the week, and
so where were all these people you say reported it to the news? Where were all the people that, if you're out in the middle of nowhere and windy country roads in the middle of farmland, how did you get thousands of people reporting it?
Oh, well, first of all, it was hundreds.
Okay.
And it was in the newspaper the day later that said that, you know, over 300 people witnessed a UFO. And this thing was so big, I'm surprised it was only 300 people, even in a rural area.
Right, because, I mean, at 1,000 feet high, you're 3 hours from your destination. What was your destination again? I'm sorry?
No. So you're misconstruing what I said.
Okay.
It was 50 feet. It was 50 feet high, and it was 1,000 feet. It was 50 feet off the ground.
Right.
And it was 1,000 feet wide by about 1,000 feet tall. The thing was huge.
Right. At 1,000 feet tall.
And it was stationary for 30 minutes.
Right.
1,050 feet up tall, in the air.
1,000 feet wide. It was almost like a triangle, except the bottom corners were rounded. Now the top was almost like a perfect point. The right and left were kind of rounded like a Hershey's Kiss. And then it had a little dimple at the bottom. And that's the only thing that made it different from a Hershey's Kiss shape, was that it had a little dimple at the bottom. But it was easy, 1,000 feet wide and 1,000 feet tall, red, yellow, orange, swirling light. Like I said, it's like a perfect camp. It was like a perfect campfire in the sky, and only 50 feet off the ground, not 1,000.
You said this was 9 hours into your trip that you saw this. When you saw the light streaking across the sky, was it immediately before that, or how long?
The big ball of burning flame that was streaking through the sky was like 20 minutes before I saw the Hershey Kiss shape.
Right. So at a thousand feet tall, that should be seen from about 35 to 40 miles away, and you were 2 hours away from your destination. So what was your destination? Well, a major city?
Well, my destination, what?
Was your destination a major city?
No, it's a very, very small town, Wabash, Indiana.
Okay.
I'd be surprised if there's 20,000 people there. But that was 2-3 hours drive from where I was.
Well,
it was in that paper.
I hate to cut things off when it's starting to get starting to parse it apart, but we've got a few callers waiting still, so I want to
keep on moving on. I got you.
Yeah, but we would love for you to call back in with your other UFO stories, because this is interesting to me. I like looking into these and digging into these. Jim does too. We like to investigate these kind of sightings, because these are, unlike some of the claims that we deal with, these are things that we can actually dig into and see newspaper reports, satellite crashes. We can look at any kind of aerial phenomenon and try to figure out what it was that you saw more natural. I get that you believe that it was a UFO, and that's understandable, but we want to try to overturn all the stones.
By definition, by definition, it was a UFO.
Right. Now, right.
Extraterrestrial. I mean, if it wasn't extraterrestrial, boy, we got some stuff that you guys won't believe that we made. I mean, this thing, I mean, and keep in mind, I can go back and we can talk about Sumerian texts and the origins of the of humans if you want, but I know you got a show to keep going. But yeah, keep in mind, I grew up strict Christian, didn't believe in any of this stuff until that night. Right. It changed my life.
Yeah, that sounds like it had a big impact on it. It sounds like you feel like your memory of it's pretty clear and everything. So, of the event,
it's totally clear. I wasn't drinking. I didn't even smoke pot back then. But my parents, my family, they think I'm crazy until now. All of a sudden, the stuff is getting released in the news, and they're starting to believe me now. So
Yeah.
I've lost friends and family over this sighting.
Right. Okay.
All right. Well, thank you, Joe. We look forward to hearing from you again in the future. Okay. You have a nice night.
Absolutely. All right. You too. Have a great show.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yeah. 300 people should still have made,
it should have been national news or some kind. Yeah, at least regional, which, and this isn't too far from my area where I think I would have heard about it on the news. 1996, though, I was a bit young. But the first part of it definitely sounded like what you see when you see a meteor shower.
Right. And like I said, the Hershey-shaped kiss, I think that the best possible spaceships that don't have to enter atmosphere are going to be around, just because when you need to change directions, it's easier to shift an engine over the surface of the craft to get you on the new vector than it is to turn the entire craft. It's one of the problems I have with like Battlestar Galactica and some of these others. You turn a ship with a big long spine, you put a lot of stress on it. And that just doesn't make any sense to me.
Are you kidding me?
Pardon?
Hello? Is that Ethan? Oh, anyway. I'm not sure about that, but if anybody out there has a UFO sighting that they want to talk about, give us a call. The number's right down there. We love to talk about it. It doesn't have to be UFOs though. You've had a ghostly encounter, say you saw a spirit, you played with a Ouija board and things happened, anything like that. We want to talk to you about it. We want to hear those claims and understand it. Or if you have a claim about experience with a God or with an angel or anything like that, please give us a call. We are here to listen. And speaking of giving us a call, it looks like Melinda has given us a call from California, and she wants to share the reason why to believe in ghosts and their experience with the supernatural. So yeah, you ready to talk about some ghosts, Jim?
Sure.
All right, Melinda, you are on with Jim and Bree. Almost called you Jen.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Hi, Melinda.
Thanks for having me on. Hi. Yeah,
glad to have your call. So do you have a ghostly experience?
I have quite a few, actually. I will share a few today with you.
Okay. Can we just so that we can get to the really juicy stuff, can we start with the most compelling one, the one you think would be the most convincing to skeptical people such as ourselves?
Yes. So I will start with, my dad was a huge skeptic. All of my experience that I would tell him, he was always saying, oh, it could be this or it could be that. Are you sure you didn't hear this or that? So one day, we live in a two-story house, and this was in Vacaville, California, when I lived there. I was about 14 or 15 at this time. We were all downstairs watching TV, including my dad, my mom, my sister, and our dog. I would hear this often, usually when I was home alone, but we would hear somebody walking upstairs, and I associated with a larger man because they sounded like very heavy footsteps.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one day we heard it. My dad heard it as well. I saw his face change and he kind of muted the TV. And I said, did you hear that? And he said, yes, I did. It's probably the dog, our dog Jojo. And I said, no, it's not. He's laying over here on the other side of the sofa. He still kind of tried to deny it and play it off, but I knew that we all heard it. And from that day, he was kind of more believing, but there was no denying it. Everybody was downstairs and you could clearly hear very heavy footsteps coming from upstairs. And I would hear this. Usually when I was home alone, my mom would be running groceries and I would actually go wait out front for her to get home. I would not go back inside. I was always so terrified.
Did the dog respond to this sound?
He did not. And he never really did. And even when times where I'd be scared and I'd leave outside, unfortunately I would leave him inside the house. And I would never hear him bark randomly at night or pop his head up or anything like that. No.
So what was up there? What all was upstairs?
So we had my mom's room, and she had a big closet and a bathroom, and then it was mine and my sister's room and another bathroom upstairs.
So there were two bathrooms upstairs altogether?
Correct. Okay. Yep.
And right, how old was the house?
You know, those houses in Vacaville, they weren't very old. I mean, they couldn't have been nice houses, a modern... it was in a nice neighborhood too. I honestly don't remember how old they are, but they weren't old. I mean, they looked okay. New. Everything seemed new. Really nice new modern houses. A lot of that area was, I guess they called it Cowtown. It was a lot of field, right. And mountains and things like that around that area.
Okay. So you hear sounds you're interpreting as footsteps. What makes you believe that that was anything other than just an audio phenomena of some kind in the house? Why jump to the supernatural?
Because it wasn't the first time. Another experience, and I believe it was the same man, was when my dad would commute to San Francisco and he would stay sometimes nights at a time. It would just be me, my mom, and my sister. One night when we were sleeping in my mom's room, as we usually did, because we were scared most of the time, again, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. So we slept with her a lot when my dad was gone. One night we were sleeping. My sister, who was 3 years older than me, woke us up and said she heard somebody coming up the stairs. Me and my mom woke up and we also heard, again, heavy footsteps coming up the stairs. And even though it was dark, you can still see a dark figure peering around the corner of my mom's door. She was so terrified, and we heard the footsteps run back downstairs as soon as we all woke up. She said, run, go hide in the closet, and she proceeded to get her bat and went to check the house. We thought somebody had broken into the house.
Mm-hmm.
It was very terrifying. She checked the whole house. Nothing was, no windows were open, nothing was unlocked. So that was, again, very terrifying, and it sounded like a man, and also the height. From him peering around the doorway, I would say, I don't know, he must have been at least 5'8".
Okay. It was just a black figure. I was here
walking. Yes, and like I said, even though it's dark, this figure was darker than dark, if that makes sense. Like, I could still see an outline, no face. We call them shadow people when we would see them, and this wouldn't be the first mm-hmm. time I've seen things peering around doorways and things while I'm watching TV. I would see things at the corner of my eye hear walking in that right. house.
That's I mean, in interpreting, anthropomorphizing what you see out of the corner of your eyes is not a new phenomenon. It's happened to me. I just don't jump to the supernatural or shadow people. I just know it's my eyes playing tricks on me because it's dark and we don't see well. And twilight, we definitely don't see well at night. you know, it's just, it becomes one of those things of you've got an audio phenomenon of, you know, of stairs, someone coming up the stairs that you're interpreting as someone coming up the stairs. And again, you're making this conclusion that it's supernatural. The most likely scenario in this case might be you actually had an intruder who came in. But the fact that he was darker than dark, as you say, would indicate that either he was wearing all black to include like a ski mask or something like that over their face. But even then, I would expect to see whites of the eyes. So this was, you know, this would have been someone prepared, a lot more prepared for people waking up than that, more than likely. I don't know.
That's scary too, to think that was a real intruder, you know, breaking into your house, which, you know, when you all were children. That's a terrifying concept. I'd rather hope it was a ghost than an intruder being.
And so would we. Yeah, my mom was terrified. I remember feeling so scared for her to go down there by herself with the bat. And you could just hear the fear in her voice. And we were a little relieved. Yes, we would much rather it be something supernatural than an actual human breaking into our house.
So real quick, was the witness, okay, so it was you and your sibling, your mom saw it too?
She did. And we all heard the footsteps run back down the stairs.
So you all saw it peek around the corner or saw them? Because I'm going to say it's to them. I'm going to assume it's a person at this point. And you could hear footsteps of them running, but all the doors and windows were locked.
Correct.
Yeah, that's.
And again, we have a dog. He did not alert that anybody was in the house.
Right. There's an interesting TV show a number of years ago called "It Takes a Thief," and the basic premise was two ex-thieves. Were the stars of the show, and they would go to people's homes and say, hey, we do this show where we break into people's home and show people how easy it is, and then give them security systems and show them how to fix it, fix their security issues. What's really interesting about that show that relates to this is that dogs never barked at anybody. In one episode, they actually stole the dog. And by steal the dog, I mean he opened the car door because he was stealing the car and the dog jumped in. There wasn't a whole lot of stealing going on. The dog was self-stealing. But it's interesting that the dogs never barked. And yet in most cases, when they'd go up with the owner inside, the dogs would bark at somebody at the door. But I don't know that the dog barking or not barking actually necessarily means something unless you have a dog that normally barks at strangers in the house when you guys are home. And if it's not that type of dog, then, you know, I don't know that you can actually read anything into that.
It's somebody the dog knew. I mean,
right.
Yeah, I do have other experiences if you guys have time. I would also feel my hair being moved, even when I was awake. And it wasn't the feeling of, you know, when you're laying down, it's falling over your face, like towards your eyes. It was more back towards, like, behind my ears. And clear as day, I could feel it. And this stuff was happening so much, I almost got used to it and not as scared over time. Other things, I would hear whispers in my ear. Even one time when I was on the phone talking to my friend, I could hear my name whispered clearly in my ear. And I ran downstairs so fast. I'm trying to think, and this was all in the same house. So that was the house that I've had the most, and what I'm still going to refer to as paranormal experience I've ever had. That was a very active house, and we lived there for about 3 years.
So when you say moving your hair, you mean like pulling it, or like just your hair fluttering?
Just gently. I can feel just gently moving my hair from, let's see, like the side of my face to up behind my ear, not tucked behind my ear. I guess you can say a flutter, not pulling. And I never got the feeling that it was anything that was trying to harm me or my family. Scare us, yes. If that was intentional, I don't know. But yes, they were all terrifying experiences.
Right. And I'm still looking for the reason you're concluding that this was supernatural instead of a bunch of one-off, you know, strange occurrences that happen in the house. What leads you to believe that it is in fact supernatural? What, just strange experiences aren't going to do it for me, and stacking them together all together is not going to do it either. So what is it that leads you to this conclusion that it was supernatural?
I guess it would be feelings of constantly being watched, though nobody's there. Hair, I'd get chills. My hair would just stand on end. And I could just be doing something, not thinking about anything paranormal, nothing scary. And then all of a sudden, you just get this eerie feeling that somebody's watching you. And I hated that feeling. I would feel that all the time in that house. I'd feel uncomfortable. I was being watched.
Are you familiar with infrasounds?
No.
Okay, so there's a phenomenon where certain frequencies of sound that we can't even audibly hear, you're not even aware of it, that they're so low that cause nervousness and fear, anxiety. And there are different architectural designs and structures, just the way that the empty spaces in the house are laid out, that under certain pressures and different wavelengths of sound that cause this infrasound response. I know the hotel that The Shining is based on, I can't remember what the real one's called, the Stanley Hotel, and the fake one's the Overlook, the real one's the Stanley Hotel, that they picked up infrasounds in the basement underneath that caused people to have that uneasy feeling when they stayed in this specific room. Now, we're very susceptible to that level of infrasound because in our evolutionary journey, that is actually a sound that is emitted by big cats when they roar. So it automatically unnerves us when we hear something in that frequency and we don't know why we're unnerved. They did some tests on it at concerts where there was music playing, and underneath the music they would play the infrasound and see the difference in the way the audience interacted with the music that they were hearing in response to that. Really interesting stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's very interesting.
And there's a 2003 group. In 2003, there's a group of UK researchers who actually did this at two different concerts and got the exact same reports from multiple people that you're giving us now in terms of weird, odd, being watched, etc. So, you know, it could definitely be that. We're not saying it is because I asked for evidence and you stacked on more experiences, and those experiences just aren't going to be enough to convince us that it was supernatural. Did you have those experiences? Absolutely, you did. And that's not what I'm questioning. I'm really trying to question how you came to the conclusion that it was anything supernatural.
I guess it's just a feeling you get. And again, it's like, it's really hard to say unless you have these experiences. And people are always going to say, oh, it could be this, or science proves that it could be this, or like you guys are saying, certain frequencies and things like that. I just don't know how I can explain hearing my name spoken right into my ear when I'm on the phone. Or yes, maybe somebody did break in and they left no trace whatsoever. People are that good. But when other people start having the same experiences and see and hear the same things you are, it's one thing to hear it yourself or see, oh, I saw this at the corner of my eye. But when it's multiple people who are seeing it, to me, it's just harder to not believe that it had happened. And I guess it's really just a feeling that I get that it is something paranormal.
Right. No, see, I've had
go ahead.
Yeah. I've had the experience of someone calling my name, turning around and nobody being there on multiple occasions. None of those occasions did I assume that there was anything supernatural about it because there was no evidence for the supernatural. I have no idea what it was to this day. But you know, and it may happen again, but it's some sort of, I won't call it auditory because I don't know for sure I heard anything. I don't know there was in fact sound. I've been next to people when it's happened and they haven't heard anything. So it could very well just be in my own head, but I'm not going to jump to a supernatural conclusion until I have evidence of something that's supernatural going on. I just have evidence of an experience. And that's kind of what we need. I mean, when we talk about ghosts, we talk, or we're usually talking about souls. There's no evidence that a soul exists. And so I mean, that would be kind of the first step to proving that any ghost story is true, is prove that souls exist. And we just don't have any evidence of that. And so where do the ghosts come from? Are they some sort of unseen entity, Buckaroo Banzai style? Maybe, maybe not. But you know, we need some evidence for it to jump to the conclusion that this is something that is in fact real. And as for multiple people, you know, multiple people saw the sun move in strange ways down in Mexico at that sighting, and multiple people have cited multiple things. And the problem with eyewitness testimony is that it is the most unreliable form of evidence we have. And it's really not until the last 20 or 30 years or so that we've really discovered just how bad eyewitnesses are, regardless of training. And it's just the way that we process information. You know, one of the things that police try to do when they've got a bunch of witnesses is separate the witnesses, not because the witnesses are actually going to actively change their stories, but in talking to each other, they will change their stories. And I'm not claiming that anybody is, you know, no foul play here, right? This is just humans being humans. And in, you know, the dominant person or the person with the strongest story will influence other people's stories. And so when you say you've got lots of witnesses, that doesn't add much to it other than you all had the same experience. But if you talked about it immediately after, did you really have the same experience, or were you just confirming each other's experiences and convincing each other you had this same experience? Because that's the most likely case, because of the way the human mind works. And again, I'm not, there's no nefarious purpose going on with this. It's just the way humans work.
Your brain uses the information your friend has given you to help build the picture of what you're remembering, and it changes how you remember things a little bit. There's a circumstance there that really gets me on that one is the they call the Kelly Hopkinsville encounter that happened in Kentucky, where the farmhouse was assaulted by little aliens that really, the description of them, they're like owls, but you see the evolution of these, the depictions that the people put of these aliens, or put out of these aliens, evolve as they kind of fed into each other's way of remembering the way the creatures looked. So shadow people especially are always intriguing when it comes to the way that people describe them and remember them. I like the way that you said out of the corner of your eye, because that's almost always the way that I've seen that I've seen them myself and had other people see them. And I don't think that there's any real physical phenomenon there. I think that that's your brain just trying to fill in what's happening over here in your peripherals as best it can.
Yes, I can see that. And I can definitely, that's why I like doing, I like to see other people's, because I'm not always going to assume everybody's going to, you know, agree with what I say or believe with what I say. So it is good to hear, you know, other sides of the spectrum, people saying, so this is great. I mean, I don't expect everybody to believe me right off the bat. I still believe what I saw, and just, again, it's a gut feeling that it was paranormal, just because I've had too many experiences in my lifetime to say otherwise. And that's kind of just how I personally feel about it.
Right.
But it is good to hear these other theories and things like this. And I really do appreciate it. And I appreciate you guys having me on and kind of hearing your take on it. It's really good information for sure.
It really, it's really been a pleasure speaking with you tonight. I know we've thrown some different ideas on what you could have been experiencing at you. Hopefully you'll, you know, take those into consideration. We didn't, you know, come into this hoping we change your mind, but there are a lot of factors that could come into play for sightings like this. All right. Well, thank you,
Melinda. And I agree. And thanks so much for having me on, guys. I hope you guys have a good rest of your night.
You too.
Take care.
Bye-bye. All right, Jim. So that we got our alien fix, we got our ghost fix.
Yep.
And Ethan, we have a super chat super chat from our friend Amit Matthews. Always, or Amit Matthew, always seems to be there in the live chat giving us support. When there's something strange in your neighborhood, who are you going to call? The Perspective. And that's 951.
I love it.
364-2430. Call us. Give us your supernatural experience. Maybe you've had an experience with something like Joe had with seeing a UFO at night, or a ghostly encounter that you recall from your childhood, like our friend Melinda had. Maybe you're going to be like our next guest and maybe have some more profound experience with God that may be coming into play. What do you think? Are you ready to talk to Dave?
Sure.
All right, let's bring Dave on. Dave wants to talk about why they believe in God.
Hi.
Hello. Hi.
Hey.
Thank you for calling the Perspective. This is Bree. I'm here with Jim, and we are interested in your claim tonight.
Awesome. I'm interested to tell you about it.
Okay, go ahead.
All right, hit us with it.
Yeah, so you want to know why I believe in God. I guess that's the question,
yes.
Right? And I mean, a lot of it, you know, there's so many reasons why I believe in God. I mean, part of it stems from personal experience. And just, so I was, as a baby, I had 2 open heart surgeries. And I survived both of them, and I'm still living, you know, to this day. So I think that's like an absolute miracle. And I think I was one of the first people in the 80s to like actually survive, you know, 2 open heart surgeries, you know, and I actually had one of the best surgeons in the world that actually worked on me. His name was Dr. Denton Cooley. So I thought that was pretty amazing. And I know my mom has said that she prayed for me in those moments or whatever. And so here I am still alive. And so I think like, wow, you know, God bless me, right? I mean, how could you not, you know, believe in something that, you know, has kind of kept me here? I mean, that's so crazy. But I mean, I think it's, you know, as I kept, you know, thinking about, you know, why do I believe in God and things about the Bible and so forth and his existence and all that kind of stuff. You know, I think about so many of people that kind of come together, you know, every Sunday to worship, you know, this thing that some people think is a fictional being. And it's like, how can something be a fictional being when so many people every Sunday gather, you know, in the same place of worship to pray to, you know, that person, you know, and they go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, so what you're talking about is a logical fallacy called the bandwagon. And basically just because a bunch of people believe something doesn't necessarily mean it's true. You know, people have believed, large numbers of people have believed that the earth is flat. Large numbers of people still believe the earth is flat. So just because a bunch of people come together and go to these different services doesn't really make anything real other than they go to these services. And I mean, when you look at, there's 1,000 different denominations out there, all of which disagree on some essential point of dogma. They're either all worshiping wrong, or one of them is worshiping right and all the rest of them are worshiping wrong. And
they can all be wrong, but
they can't all be right. And that's you know, and so I don't know that why just because a bunch of people get together, because by that logic, Hinduism has far more people, if I remember correctly, than Christianity. And so does that mean Hinduism is right and Christianity is wrong because they have more people? Does it work that way?
No, not at all. That's absolutely not it. I mean, if you think about it, I mean, it's tons of different religions, but everybody is going and to worship something that they would consider God. But it's so far beyond that because, I mean, if you read into the Bible, like, for instance, I will read something here to you. It says, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, and that's Genesis 1:1. And so
why should I take Genesis over, say, the creation myth of the Egyptians or the Norse or pick any American Indian tribe or South American tribe. Or
other Canaanite civilizations,
yeah. or other Canaanite civilizations. Why does the Bible get special place over the hundreds, if not thousands, of other creation myths?
Why does the Bible? Okay, so I'll answer that question. I think a lot of it is just as the more and more you read into the Bible and you look at like history too. So one of the things that the Bible says is that God is a jealous God, right? And so that's
but
a really
but is God a loving God? Is God a loving God?
Yeah, he is, but he's also
is love jealous?
Yeah, absolutely.
Love is jealous. I'm pretty sure the
love is jealous, but
you see my point. And
no,
when you
I
say
absolutely see your point.
Yeah, and when you say that the you look into history and the Bible is at best historical fiction. There are events we know could not have happened. For instance, the flood could not have happened the way it's described, because you would have destroyed the planet with that much water inundating and there's not that much water to begin with. There's from multiple different scientific disciplines, we can show that there's just no way for the flood as described in the Bible to have happened. That's item one. Item two, the Exodus could not have happened because it would be a million men plus all of the families and wives and everything else crossing a very small part of the desert. Took them 40 years. It takes 14 days, according to Google. And that many people traveling that short a distance would have, we know, would have left some trail. It's just too many people. Not only that, but by some archaeologist estimates, the entire population of Egypt was about a million people. So there's just a number of ways that we know that this simply wasn't possible. And not to mention, there's no archaeological evidence of a large population of Canaanites, which the Israelites were, in Egypt in any kind of significant numbers. Even on exaggeration, there's just not enough there, even as slaves or free people. It doesn't matter which way you go. There's just no archaeological evidence for this. And this is something that Egyptian archaeologists and Israeli archaeologists agree on. There's no basis for that. And so if you don't have that basis, then the rest of everything that follows doesn't really work out that well for you. So when you say it follows history, I'm not sure what you mean.
So I'll explain a couple of things, and I'm glad you brought up a lot of those points, because one of the things that the Bible says is that God walked on water. Is that possible? Can anybody walk on water? God also
turned, are you talking about Jesus?
Water into wine.
What? No, actually, so first of all, both of those are magic tricks that can be performed by magicians. And in fact, the water and the wine trick is still performed today by so-called magic men in India to prove to people in rural areas of India that they do, in fact, have magical power. It's easy enough to do. You just need a trick flagon. As for walking on water, there are a number of ways to create that effect that don't require modern special effects. So to answer your question, yes to both those.
Well, but are you actually, okay, all right. So what I was going to say about the before, though, is one of the things I was going to talk about is the fact that being that God is a jealous God, and I'm going to kind of go back to that for a second. He wants to be the only one. He wants to be the king. He wants to be the worship one. And so what's really interesting is if you think about people like Dr. Martin Luther King, or you think about, artists that have died, that people really worship, like Kurt Cobain or whatever, so many of them have died, right? And you go, well, what does that have to do with anything with God? Well, being that God is a jealous God and he's the only one who wants to be worshiped, I started thinking into my mind. I said, wow, that's, really crazy to think about, because could it be that he took
people? We actually have a name for that condition. It's called narcissism. And when you start punishing people around you and acting on that, that can become malignant narcissism, which is something that we see from the biblical God as well. So, and also when you go back and you look at the ancient Assyrians and Babylonians, you will find that there is mention of a God who does exactly that. Who wants to be the only God and can't be because he's part of a pantheon. And oh, by the way, apparently his name is Yahweh. So I'm not sure where you're going with this. Why do we care that this is a God who wants to be the only God and wants to be loved like a narcissist?
Well, I guess maybe that's not the way that I look at it. I don't look at it like he's a narcissist. I think I look at it but like
your claim that hold on, just hold on just a second. Was your claim just a moment ago that he was responsible for the deaths of these musicians and artists, political figures that people were worshiping, that in his jealousy that he killed these people like Kurt Cobain? That seemed to be the line of reasoning.
That's absolutely what I said.
If someone was willing to kill other people out of jealousy that they're getting worshipped instead, is that a good figure? Is that a positive figure in our lives?
I'm not saying that it's a positive figure, but I'm just saying that it kind of goes along with the whole jealousy and him not wanting people to worship other gods or other, I think he wants, that's like the Christian belief, I guess,
right.
Is that so, he wants to be the only one that you worship.
Well, let me read you some symptoms of narcissism real quick. And this is off the Mayo Clinic website. Mm-hmm. Have an exaggerated sense of self-importance, check. Have a sense of entitlement and require constant excessive admiration, check. Expect to be recognized as superior even without achievements that warrant it. Check. Exaggerate achievements and talents. Be preoccupied with fantasies about success, power, brilliance, beauty, or the perfect mate. Yeah, maybe not that one. Believe they are superior and can only associate with equally special people. And he wants to associate only with himself and get rid of everybody else. So maybe not that one. Monopolize conversations and belittle or look down on people they perceive as inferior. Check. Expect special favors and unquestioning compliance with their expectations. Check. Take advantage of others to get what they want. Check. Have an inability or unwillingness to recognize the needs and feelings of others. Big check. Be envious of others and believe others envy them. That would be jealousy you just mentioned. Check. Behave in an arrogant or haughty manner, coming across as conceited, boastful, and pretentious. Okay, check. That's arguable. I mean, I can go out of the way at that one. Insist on having the best for everything. For instance, the best car or office. He wants the firstborn of everything and the first 10%. Check. That sounds like narcissism to me.
Mm-hmm. So now, if he doesn't exist, he really can't be any of those things, though, right?
Right.
Well, but the people who write about him can be all of those things, right? And they can make it sound like that these are all stories. And in fact, when we go back, we find out that there's a lot of these stories, like the flood myth goes back, and there are multiple stories of flood myths. Being saved from Egypt and all that, we find that there's a lot of these kinds of stories running around. And so, what's more likely, that a great benevolent God is a giant narcissist or that he doesn't exist?
Well, what was the question again? Sorry.
So what's more likely, that someone with all of those narcissistic personality traits checked off is a great benevolent God or that he doesn't exist?
I would have to say that it's more that he could be a narcissist, more than he doesn't exist, because it's too difficult. If you think about everything that's been created, from a religious perspective, you look at it that it's been created through the hands of God, right? And I think that
that needs to be evidence. I mean, what's your evidence that it was created?
That's an unfounded claim there.
I had to be created from something, right? It didn't just come here, right?
You're making the something from nothing. Yeah, you're making the something from nothing argument. There's a problem with this. The philosophical nothing, which is what most theists are referring to, doesn't appear to be able to exist according to what we know about science so far. So what scientists and physicists in particular will say nothing is, if you take a box made out of lead and it's a Faraday cage that eliminates all electromagnetic radiation as well as other forms of radiation, You suck everything out of it so that it's a complete total vacuum. And then you take that box and you out where there's the gravity is zero, you still don't have nothing. Because what you have are the quantum fields, because we don't seem to have any way to block those out. And it is entirely possible out of this box, which is not nothing, you can end up with things popping into existence.
Protons.
Because this is what happened, right? Protons, neutrons, those the smaller atomic particles. Because the quantum particles already exist, and we can't seem to find a way to block those out. And we do know that quantum particles do appear to pop in and out of existence for no particular reason. So your entire concept of something from nothing doesn't really work with everything we currently know. Now, all this can change because some of what I've just described is hypothetical, but it is the best possible explanations we have for these things. So again, you need to demonstrate that a God exists in order to demonstrate he created something. Just because there's something, the universe exists, doesn't prove God exists.
Well, you know, I can't disagree with you on that, but at the same time, I think about, you know, I don't know, it's just like, it's so huge. It's like, if you think about the world and everything in it and whatever, I mean, it's like to say that it just came from nothing. It had to have come from something, whether it was God or something else. You know, it had to have come from something. Nothing like a car doesn't just come, right? It has to be.
Also, here's the problem with that analogy. A car is inside of the universe. A car does not exist outside of the universe. And that's kind of what you're talking about. So we know that cars exist and cars are made because we know how cars are made. Now, how are universes made?
How are gods made?
Yeah.
Well, God, so if God created everything, he was created unto himself, I guess. I mean,
you're begging. So, right. So that's special pleading fallacy, right? You're saying that everything was created except for God.
Well, no, because God had to be created as well. And so.
And who created God?
Not everything was created except for God, because God had to be created as well.
So then you end up in this infinite regress of gods creating gods, creating gods, creating universes. Why put the gods in there in the first place when you can have universes, creating universes, creating universes? Why even personify those forces that set things into motion?
Wait, what was the question?
Why personify the forces that set things into motion?
I don't understand what you mean.
So, anthropomorphize maybe might be a better word for you. Why anthropomorphize the forces that set the universe into motion? Why give them a character? Why can't they just be natural?
Yeah, why forces? Like why give them the credit?
No. Why make them into an entity? Why can't it just be something natural? Why does it have to be intelligent? Why does it have to have a will?
I mean it doesn't necessarily have to be, but that's just like the Christian belief, right? And so it's believing in that and based off of the Christian belief or my beliefs or, you know, the teachings that you read from the Bible, that's what the belief is. And so you just stick to that belief, right? So as like a Christian.
So you're advocating, so do you care about what's true?
Do I care about what's true? I care about what faith has taught me. And I care about what I've seen.
Okay. So it's a simple yes or no question. It's a simple yes or no question. Do you care about the truth?
I care about the truth, but what is the truth is the question, right?
Because the truth is that which comports with reality.
What did you say?
The truth is that which comports with reality.
Okay. But, how can you 100% prove the reality? Let's see here. Cuts out his existence, right? Because reality, but the reality is, I have a book here that has thousands and thousands of pages of words.
So what?
That put him into existence, right?
And that's the Silmarillion. and all of the books written about J.R.R. Tolkien's Middle Earth are bigger than the Bible. Does the size of the book have anything to do with whether or not it's true?
It's not the size of the book. It's just the simple fact that it exists. It's an existence.
But there's
the books on Middle Earth exist as well.
Believe it.
The books on Middle Earth exist as well. There is nothing you can say about the Bible that I can't point to another book of fiction and say the same thing about.
What is it about the Bible that you find compelling for us to believe, to care what it says? It's a book of ancient laws and mythology, from my understanding of a plain reading.
So what I find to be so interesting, and this is not necessarily true of the whole Bible because there's so many different parts of the Bible, but when you, one of my favorite verses is, because you have so little faith, I tell you, you can have faith just as small as a mustard seed, and you can say to those mountains, move from here to there, and they will move, right? I love that verse a lot, and I just love
how moved any mountains?
I can find, absolutely. Now, not physical mountains, but I definitely moved things in my life. So that's one of the things that I, love about, religion.
So right. But that's just basic motivation, right? I mean, that's just basic motivational speaking. There's 100 different motivational speakers you can get almost the exact same thing out of, and a lot more useful advice than that, actually, about staying motivated. The Bible occasionally has some good advice in it. What makes that true?
The whole book has a whole book called Proverbs. That just means pithy little things to make you feel good. So other than
the Bible, it's not all about that though. It's not all about that though. There's some very dark pieces in the Bible too. So, it's not all just positive and encouraging.
No, some of the worst stuff in the Bible is the promotion of slavery, and the fact that you can beat your slaves and as long as they don't die within 3 days, you're okay. But slaves are your property and your money. Mm-hmm. The Bible is very clear about this. The Bible is very clear that a rape victim that rape is not a crime against the victim; it's a crime against the husband or the father, and that you can end up with the rape victim having to marry her rapist. And that is not a good thing psychologically for anybody. That's a very bad thing. And it's also immoral. And your God supports that. Your Bible supports that. And we can go on and on and on about things that the Bible supports that is just really, really horrifyingly bad. So again, you haven't given us any reason to believe that your God exists. You keep pointing to the Bible. The Bible proves God. God proves the Bible. That's just a circular argument that goes nowhere and isn't convincing. So again, what do you have that should convince us that your God exists?
Or that we should care what the Bible says?
Well, so I think the Bible is kind of like the gateway to understanding God and the Christian times, and it's also understanding the end times, and it helps you to understand maybe things that are happening in your life or in the world as we see it now. So I think you keep talking about the negative things about the Bible, and I get that, but the reality is I'm not here to prove that the Bible is totally this saint. I'm here to prove that God exists, right? So
and you keep failing to do that.
You may not be the best God. Right. Yeah. Well, yeah. And I'm probably not doing the greatest job at it, but
if the Bible doesn't matter to whether or not God exists, then I say, let's throw that out right now. And let's continue the conversation without the Bible on the docket here. So what without the Bible, what is there for God?
Without the Bible? Well, I think about myself and I think about other, very religious people or whatever, and people that are, even more religious than me. And I think about, I wouldn't say success that they've had, but I'll say that I think this is not true of all religious people, but I think, about myself, and I think about, the success that I've had. And I think, part of that comes from religion, and just the teachings and the things that
if your religion gives you success, why are some of the poorest countries and poorest areas of the United States highly, highly religious?
So that's a very good question. And the truth is that, you know, it isn't always going to be like that. Like for me, like, I can't say that I've had tons and tons of success, but, and God doesn't just give you everything that you want. Right. And I'm not expecting that God is going to give me everything I want.
But,
and
actually, but shouldn't you, I mean, the Bible,
when you may,
the Bible's pretty clear that if you get two or three people in his name and you all pray for the same thing at the same time, he'll give it to you.
Well, you know, and that's the benefit of prayer, and that's the benefit of believing.
So have you and three other people ever gotten together? Have you and three other people ever gotten together and wished for $1 billion or prayed for $1 billion?
No, we haven't, because I mean, I think that's a little unrealistic, but no, but I
not according to the Bible, it's not.
You can move mountains.
And that might.
Yeah, you can move mountains.
I'm not going to wish for money, I guess, but I have prayed though with people for sure. I mean, I just about every Wednesday I do a Bible study. And so we always, you know, ask, hey, is there anybody who's in need of any prayer or whatever? And so we all pray for the, you know, those in need of prayer.
So you're praying for people, you're praying for good things to happen to people who are working to make good things happen. What's more likely, that the prayer is effective or that the work paid off?
Well, it's not that. It's we're not praying for that. Like if somebody's sick, we're praying for that. It's things like that. Like, you know, so-and-so, my uncle's sick, or like this person had, you know, is having a surgery, you know, could you pray for them, or this person is sick? I mean,
right. You know that the Mayo Clinic has done a study on the efficacy of prayer and has found it to be no better than random chance, right?
I was about to say, yeah.
No, I didn't know that. That's very interesting.
Yeah. As a general rule of thumb, it is no better. And if the person knows they're being prayed for, it's actually slightly worse than chance. Not sure why. But yeah, it is. It's no different than random chance. Yeah. That's the thing. People have actually studied the efficacy of prayer, and the best we can come up with is doesn't work better than chance.
Well,
Dave. Well, I guess I must get lucky, I guess.
Yeah. Good doctors are what makes a difference for these medical things that you're praying for. You're in the U.S., it sounds like, based on your accent. We have some of the best medical doctors in the world working in hospitals across this country. So someone gets sick in the U.S., they have a better chance here than they do pretty much anywhere. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, Dave, sure. We appreciate your call tonight. It's been,
you're welcome.
An interesting discussion, lots of talk of the Bible and God, and some, hopefully we gave you some ideas to think about, and maybe you'll mull those over and give us a call back, come back with maybe some different directive, different arguments to kind of the things that we're saying tonight. But we're running out of time here, so we just wanted to wrap
all right,
up.
No worries.
Anything else you want to say before we drop you off and
move on? Nope, that's it.
All right. Thank you,
Dave. That was awesome. It was great. Great talking to you guys.
Yep. Have a good night.
All right. Have a good night.
All right. What do you think, Jim? We had our alien call, we had our ghost call, and we had our God call. We had the trifecta tonight.
Yep.
That's awesome. Those are my favorite shows, is when we get the variety of all different types of claims. Like, I don't want it to just be ghosts or just be God, like a little bit of everything is nice.
Would be nice. Yeah. Yeah. That was
fun. I think we had another super chat there, Ethan. Did you?
Yes. Left, right, left says, look at the trees. Look at the trees. How else could a world have something as amazing as these? Something from nothing equals a God. Otherwise, to me, it just seems quite odd. Also, thank you, Asexual Atheist, for your super chat. Unfortunately, it timed out in StreamYard, so I can't put the comment on the screen again, but thank you so much.
It did say keep the conversation going. Good job is what Asexual Atheist said.
Thank you. Good memory. Also, we're going to go into Discord after the perspective. As you know, we have our wrap-up show where we talk about how it went. Everyone here is, of course, feel free to join. A link to my Discord is in the description of the video. Brainbug, what do you got going on?
Well, this Saturday, as always, I will be doing Live from the Hive, Saturday morning, 9:30 Central. We talk about some cryptozoology, we talk about some science, and we talk about some bad medical takes. we got all kinds of good stuff coming up for you this Saturday. So
awesome.
Join us.
And Jim, how about you?
Well, on the 21st, I'll be co-hosting on AXP again. Then I'll be back next first Tuesday of next month. So that's all I've really got going.
Great. I'd like to thank our top tier patrons, Cindy Plaza, Left, Right, Left, Kenneth Leonard, Sky, Jump and Shoot, Oz, Secular Rarity, Philip Leach, Caitlin Beyond, Toast, Richard Gilliver, Sunset Sarge, Amit Matthew, Ray Sylvester, and Kyle Brewer. Thank you so much for your patronage. Yeah, we do. We appreciate all the viewers and everyone who engages in the chat and tunes in each and every Tuesday. We'll see everyone in Discord. Have a good night.